Earplay is made possible by grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts.
A series of contemporary plays for radio. Earplay. This week, Earplay presents Good Causes, written and performed by Gamble Rogers. Rogers is a Renaissance man of the South, a teller of tales, humorist, songwriter, poet, and musician. Shunning the enticements of commercial success, Rogers has remained a journeyman singer, a kind of modern-day troubadour traveling round the country, performing live every night. Some of his classic monologues have already been heard on National Public Radio's All Things Considered, to which he has been an occasional contributor. He was commissioned to compose a piece for the Earplay series. Good Causes, The Confessions of a Troubadour, written and performed by Gamble Rogers.
First, the boy had only the songs of church and kitchen. His mother would sing to him about the Civil War when he had an earache, and his father had read tales to him out of an old set of leather-bound books. Pauline would sing at the stove about floods and amazing places. One day, she told him a story about a child with a crooked foot who made friends with a rattlesnake. The boy disliked school from the beginning. He was the only pupil in history to escape from Mrs. Eichelberger's kindergarten. He did this by dint of standing up in a swing, this, of course, being forbidden, pumping himself to a gravity-defying altitude, then launching off two-thirds of the way through the upswing and caterwauling like a ruptured gosling over a previously unassailable cyclone fence into a manure heap next door. The boy was instantly acclaimed a hero by his peers. He carried this distinction with less than salutary modesty.
Found the truth on a jailhouse wall. Well, I was lean on a pickle, still I learned how to smile. You see, the Lord gives me grace, and the devil gives me style. He said, boy, you better start out like you were holding out, sir, if you want to leave this earth alive. Thank you, devil. You got that big man, come on down there, get on the shelf and take his place over myself.
Each summer they came to the Valley of Nacoochee, named after a Cherokee princess. Gaunt men worked there at farming. Although this place shone like a little Eden in the clear light, one sensed it to be glutted with the weight of seasonal duties undertaken in monotony. The boy would grow to understand how such monotony can unbalance man's will with dreams of holy terror, hunger of duty, clan-driven acts of cruelty and war lust. Indeed, the fathers of this time were far-flung, bent to the exigencies of world war. Meantime, their children junketed in melon-strewn Georgia meadows and hunted arrowheads and salamanders in the creek bottoms. All about lay steamboat Gothic summer places with their spring houses and latticed gazebos all folded back into wooded veils that sundered the ridges around. The boy scampered with his cousins over empty porches. Some days, when the air was hot and still, it seemed to glow with red dust. Summer rains came often. The air blast gone suddenly chill, streaming out over the cove and flank of the flickering Piedmont, wuthering amongst plunging branches whose silver-bellied leaves were set to withering like menhaden in the sheeting pelt and drench. Leaves were plastered like tissue over rutted trunks.
The skies turn dark as night. Rain 5 days, skies turn dark as night. Trouble was taking place in that low land at night.
In these times of weather, the children retreated up under the gables in the attic. Here they costumed themselves from ancient trunks and staged impromptu theater. Under these same eaves, the boy would sit shoulder to shoulder with his older cousin, Doris. She read poetry to him from her diary. He shivered wild again with nature. There was little of dread in the boy's life. Now and again a road sign that obtruded, prepare to meet thy God. At the crossroads, another sign which admonished, beware of the mark of the beast. Once a water snake coursed innocently through subterranean pipes, only to become stuck half out of the nozzle of the fountain that centered the side yard. The fountain stopped, someone shouted. The boys advanced on tiptoe around the badminton court, infiltrating the formal garden, solicitous of privet and flower bed, snap-shooting with their BB guns at the serpent who writhed like a black streamer. You have no grace, Pauline said. Why you want to kill him? It was just a dumb snake, the boy said, teasing the old black woman. You can't kill Satan, she went on. Satan was an angel once. You better learn to pray for him, too. Lock that gun in a closet along with your pride. He made a face at her and ran out. Pauline was always talking about religion. His mother and his aunt said she was superstitious.
Boy with the shallow eye and club foot coming by, the community women conjured them with a glance. There by the house of gray and green, green grass, passing away out past all limit of sea, where faintly seen the yellow streaming slithered in the green. The crows came in this over, falling and unfolding, dark intent. A thousand shaking shadows swooped and screamed and ripped their one that flapped ahead, crippled to begin, and then fell dead from out the sky before the boy with the shadow eye and club foot. One day at school and then away, the other children up from play flinging stones. The shadow boy leaps and moans and flaps away, the others turn, and he comes to stay in the house of gray by the green where the yellow goes. Bright sun glows daily over green. It pleased the boy now to lie unseen, at last befriended by the yellow flowing. But who can blame that stranger come by chance to slay the golden rattlesnake that slithered in the green? For the boy who stumps more and farther between dry green grasses, seeing nothing but a yellow hope, turning now his shadow eye on every man.
It didn't begin as dread, rather as contemplation of these serious things. The road signs, Pauline's strange radiance, her mystical silences. Summer ended with his grandmother's death. He stood wonderingly before her closed coffin, smarting with shame at his own blazing mortality. And now these threads of contemplation spun themselves into the rope of dread which was to stricture his heart for years to come. His life phased into stations with journeys between. He saw language and colors, felt for the ebb and tug of planets. Now he saw signs everywhere. The redbird who came solitary, slanting by twilight to peck at the library window glass, its heart stunned with some silent song of love lost.
Beside the wings of the moon, over these prison walls I would fly.
Came across from Cape Hatteras with the headlights of the car half blacked over. There was much talk of the war among the men, and the boy was to start school this year. Their house stood just behind a boardwalk that fronted the sea. Like the boardwalk, this habitation stood up on barnacle pilings. North Atlantic storms pitched landward, pushing the rim of the ocean up under the house itself, which racked and yawed and groaned and creaked. The boy and his brother slept warm against the steady thrumming of surf that ricocheted off the floorboards from below. Offshore in the Gulf Stream, the glow of torpedoed merchant ships emboweled with fire. Once the boy and his brother, playing in the dunes, unearthed a life raft, discovering for themselves how enemy spies came and went with the same impunity as winter storms. Sunset brought friendly warplanes on beach patrol. Marine corsairs, their inverted gull wings and thrashing propellers scarcely clearing the wave tops. The boy and his brother, loving the ground roar of these war machines, clambered onto the boardwalk, standing proudly at attention, saluting the planes as they swept past. Always the pilots rewarded them by dipping their wings. Today, the boy worked alone, within sight of the still house. Effortlessly, he modeled the moist sand into a fortress with crenellated walls, a moat, and a drawbridge. His father built things, big things, houses and stores. The boy sang as he built, thought of cities, airplanes. He loved his hand. Suddenly, the boy was not alone. The Christian had approached him directly, trudging over the otherwise deserted strand with the wind at his face. The Christian was perhaps 15 years old, his eyes dull with impacted sensibility, the eyes of a bird. He brandished a Bible. The sight of this black volume on the beach in springtime startled the boy. He thought of Sunday school. He wished to be alone. "Hi," he said finally. The other said nothing. He sought to hold the boy's gaze. The boy felt brazen by the stranger's eyes. He scanned the beach. It was empty. Now the sand castle mocked his sight. It seemed lopsided, a puny shell. For the first time, he looked upon the work of his hands with disdain. "Are you saved?" said the Christian, his face close in. "What do you mean?" the boy replied, inching away. "Are you washed in the blood?" the Christian demanded. "Please," the boy begged, his eyes uncertain. I don't... The sun hung right behind the Christian's head so that his voice streamed at the boy out of a penumbra of sunspots. The glassy white sand vibrated with the glance and dazzle of light. The boy squinted up through a haze of tears, afraid to take his eyes off his inquisitor. He heard the carving sound of wings. A chevron of pelicans drifted sidewise above, monitoring the shore in prehistoric calm. "You must taste of the blood and the flesh," the Christian ranted on his knees now beside the boy. "Only then can you hope to die and be reborn." The boy was crying. From where he knelt, squinting into the sun, the surf appeared to run black and hissing. Wetted sand crackled in the heat, and tatters of brown sea foam blistered and swizzled over broken angel's wings. "Sir?" the Christian howled, leaping up as the boy began moving. "Sir, you'll go to hell and burn in endless fire. The devil will rend and tear your flesh. Repent! Repent!" Become a troubadour. He thrilled to the power of words. Moving from city to city, failed in marriage, his search became laddered with the declensions of despair. He felt lost. Doris told him, "You're trapped in yourself," she said. "Go easy and hunt your own beauty. Life will burst in you like a flower." "But I feel so bound," he complained. She ended by sending him words from the poet Dylan Thomas, who sang in his chains like the sea. And now the boy became the troubadour.
Well, there wasn't a whole lot shaking up there in Habersham County when I came along. In fact, I don't believe that me and my boy cousins would have made it through if it hadn't have been for the Sky Lake Campfire Girls. Yeah, about every third Saturday, we'd hear the silver, tender, sweet bird song flitterings of the Sky Lake Campfire Girls, steaming down the valley in that big steak body truck, just a shimmering rainbow panoply of prepubescent porcupine. Singing those wonderful old campfire girl songs like, "I wish I was a fishy in the sea. How swimmy and I'd scooty without no bathing suity. Oh, I wish I was a fishy in the sea." And I stand before you today, mortally embarrassed to admit that those half-baked sentiments absolutely drove us wild. For you see, we were just young pups. All of us had been simultaneously, it seemed, overwhelmed by that all-pervasive, intransigent, fulminating escalation of the sap of blood lust. Oh, it was perfectly natural. You know, we were just growing up, but something had hold of us, and we didn't know what it was. It was just like somebody had said, "Here, hold this," and they split. Leave you holding a 25-foot boa constrictor. In a situation like that, you don't know whether you're holding the snake or that mother's holding you. But you sure know something's got hold of you. And we thought maybe if we could spy on those campfire girls, we might find out what it was had hold of us. They always roasted marshmallows and weenies down at my grandfather's spring. We'd flit out of the house and ghost from tree to tree like Indian frontline scouts. We'd hit the dirt an inch along in close communion to Mother Earth like amorous angleworms. We'd spread that last little spray of verdure and look down on that smorgasbord of sensuality. And it was at this place that I sustained my first great revelation regarding sex, which was simply that I was lying ankle to Adam's apple in poison ivy. And I ain't never been able to look at a campfire girl since without scratching. I know a little girl, and I want her for my wife. She's pretty and sweet and neat, little feet, never been kissed in her life. I ask her for a kiss, she says, "Don't want a bow." In every time, she vows and declares she'll never do so anymore. Gonna be a better girl and never kiss again. Afraid my mom might find
find it out. Cause her green face, well, you may walk and talk and hold my hand, but kissing is a crime. I'll not kiss you anymore until next time.
So the troubadour loved words, but he used them blindly, hankering only for facts. He became smug and glib. When he stood in an audience, he sometimes felt as if he were only imitating himself. He wondered if he had heart. He doubted his gifts, and particularly his use of them. The troubadour remembered Pauline saying that Satan speaks to the world through the strength of man, not through his weaknesses. The troubadour now yearned for good causes. He drew himself back down the umbilicus of time, hungering for love's lessons. He returned to the beach of childhood. The father and the son breasted the storm, leaning seaward from where they stood on the stone jetty. Wave and undertow coursed and sucked at the blasted chunks of gray rock, drenching them with spume. Seagulls dotted the beach, wings tucked, facing the northeaster. See the thunderhead? His father asked. The thunderhead lay parallel to the horizon, running from north to south, purple and smooth as a shark's belly, rounded at the near end like the snout of a mako. The wind came suddenly cold. The boy connected this with a thunderhead. He thought about the submarine. What would you do, his father asked, if you were swept up in that, those waves? What would become of you? Where would you go? You have to learn to think about things like that, you know. This scared the boy. His father's voice was tinged with strange concern. For a moment, he imagined he was about to be flung to the thrashing waves, a sacrifice. His father continued, you never know when you might go away. And where do you go? Everyone needs. Now his father took him slowly by the shoulders and turned him around. The boy shyly sought his father's eyes, which seemed to plead with him through a look of wondrous attachment. Where will we go? The father said once more. Suddenly, the years fell away between them. The boy understood now that his father didn't know the answers to these questions either, and had chosen to share his own naked vulnerability in the deepest sense of kinship. The son melted in the father's trust. His tears ran hot and quick. Now he ducked and hugged his father's leg, relishing the hand at his shoulder. The boy imagined the Christian on the beach somewhere with his arms tucked in bird-like, looking into the eye of the storm.
Thank you.
mine beyond the sun. Lord, look the moon at me.
When the troubadour returned to Natuchi Valley, it was to speak with Doris, who came there in broken marriage. They stood on the porch at night in the fragrance of boxwood and hemlock. Yellow firelight whirled and swam in the antique window panes. The silver-beaded lawn glimmered with brilliance. "It doesn't matter whose fault," she said. "It's still a failure. Do you understand?" "I think I do," the troubadour replied. Then he sang the... aquarium called Marine Land, where huge fish swam in endless circles. Tourists would observe these creatures through underwater windows. Doris worked with dolphins, training them perfectly in acts of faith. She wrote the troubadour often. She was pleased he had learned to laugh at himself. Sundered connections. The troubadour laughs at himself.
Drunk again. Sports car, weave, sand, rock, orange grove, where's cottage, clabbered temple of Venus, hello Aphrodite, goodbye Pallas Athena, virgin boy, stone drunk virgin boy, virginity like hot stone on tongue going to spit out stone, 20 years to learn how to spit, slow learner. Head whirling, top down, windshield over hood, mosquitoes and teeth, dragonfly and teeth, air not moving, ice water sweat, chattering armpits, orange blossoms by thousands, sickly sweet odor, thick as molasses, puff cheek, tooth clenched, cheek leak, spurt, puke over side of door, car stop, probably stuck. First gear moves, good car, limber ratcheting of timing chain, tuneful sibilance of dual venturi, good car. Miracle of internal combustion, pressurized fire, cloistered ingrained iron, tappets, rocker arms, car stuck, bam car, miraculous engine, nothing but air pump, rock car, unstuck. Throwing sea bottle straight up, gun motor, bottle hits branch, falls on trunk, bam. Almost brain cell. See headlines now. Coronation of spondylitic ectomorph in Orange Grove with Jack Daniels bottle. Pot. Car. Horniest billy goat. Pride and pants. 700 million minute tadpoles swimming resolutely behind eyeballs. Stickers on lemon tree. Nettles. Thundering through viburnum. Cottage. Can't find steps. Crawl through porch rail. Butt porch swing. Creaking chain, getting up, knock flower pot off rail, creeping Charlie. Scratch at half glass door, organdy curtains on inside, waning self-assurance, bad breath for sure. Tap, tap, come on Aphrodite. Nose against glass, extrude tongue, angle tongue down, window mull, examine for taste, glazer's point, taste of own blood. Organdy curtains, moving small silver tube between curtains aimed at bridge of nose. Using nose as fulcrum, rock head to see through glass. Silver tube has vertical blade surmounting front. Lettering engraved on side S&W, 38 caliber. Don't shoot! Don't forget to play sympathy angle. Aphrodite crying, gun in hand, hair curlers, toenail polish, split toenails. Come in. Thank you. Must talk. Coffee. Thank you. Talk to me. Aphrodite on floor, knees under chin, house coat pinioned under knees. Don't speak. Talk to me, she says. Coffee. 1 hour and 40 minute monologue about Aeschylus, Nietzsche, Albert Camus, Juan Fangio, and Errol Scruggs. Aphrodite with shining eyes. Aphrodite saying, you're different. Uh-oh. Aphrodite says the others only want, well, you know. Fatherly smile. Better off dead. Smith and Wesson fail, both of us. More coffee. Aphrodite rhapsodizes about true sharing. You've shown me the real you. True friends. So rare. We'll call you Buddy Buddy. No, she'd call me Jabbermouth. 700 million tadpoles turned to killer whales, beating ocean inside head to fall. His eyes like windows at Marineland, slack-jawed reverie. Buddy Buddy, Aphrodite looking deeply into eyes, killer whales, shut eyes. Buddy Buddy, I could just open eyes, just hug you. Incipient dawn, doom down, head spinning, stomach churring, sand slog, car, orange blossoms, gallon of coffee, sour mash, eye grit, head throb, vomit again. Dry heaves, volcanic waves of fulminating dyspepsia, wall-eyed with sexual impoverishment. Buddy, buddy.
A cabaret, you know the truth. a pretty waitress at my table. A pretty waitress at my table. What I do for you? Oh, baby, I'm so lonely, girl, at ease. I need a woman to love me. But if you cannot love me, then Jack Daniels, if you please.
Was in the ground before he knew, dead by no design of nature. The troubadour, working in some far place, mounted the stage that night, singing of things lost and learned. Later, someone said her life was a poem. Doris moved among the towering enchantments of St. Augustine, wearing clothes that she made of Irish linen, her hair in a long pigtail. Oftentimes in the company of those who sought her out instinctively to share with her the secrets of their hearts, she would monitor these treasures gladly, and they would go away more graceful for having been listened to by this creature who spurned the pipe, who spurned the bottle, who loved the salt air and the sunlight, and who hated only cruelty. She who died at the hands of one of those with whom she walked, and who now lies buried in St. Augustine, where she is remembered by poems and elegies and eulogies, by paintings and statuary. For the ancient city is a place of artists and writers, as well as fools and fishermen. Doris, round the bishop's clock, she serves him macaroons and tea. She bought him oysters at the dock. At night, she came to me, graceful as a pharaoh's daughter, bringing life in sour ground. She brought me green to the Spanish water, showed me bridges out of town. Thank you. Teaches him that the song of sorrow never lives in the singer's heart after all, but in the world around. The mother who gives life, the father who brings understanding, the wise maid servant, the challenge of the witness, the red sorrow. All these are seen as good causes by the troubadour whose greatest wish should be to frame truth in simplicity.
Too young to stop her playing, her mama used to say, the mirror says I'm graying, the road sign says to pray. There's brandy on the sideboard, there's cotton in the screen, there's semis on the skyway, and I am in between. There's trawlers on the South Sea, there's melons in the sun, there's red dust in the windrows, and baby was made for fun. Now Johnny, he has gone to war, while his boy child turns to stone. Sister serves a hired hand, and the big house stands alone. Once the homestead was a sick bay, in 1864, the sons of Clarendon County bled all down the hard pine floor. Once the couples moved so easily, how the dancers made a square. Oh, it was mandolins and violins, and sweat was in our hair. Mama says the husband who has left Aunt Martha's girl, he has left her in the lurch. She waits for me out in the world, just like an empty church. Now my best friend plays a blue guitar. By night he does his work, and his thoughts are mostly wilderness. Oh, his life, it is never lost. Oh, when people used to treat you mean, and your dreams would fall apart, you would always come to me, and I would hide you in my heart.
Good Causes, The Confessions of a Troubadour, was written and performed by Gamble Rogers. Four of the songs included in the program were produced by Stephen Powers and were used by courtesy of Mountain Railroad Records of Cambridge, Wisconsin. Good Causes was engineered by Paul Martinson and produced by John Madden for Earplay, the Radio Drama Production Center for Public Broadcasting.
Earplay is made possible by grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts. This is NPR, National Public Radio.